This is Bob Guccione or whatever it is. Guccione. He publishes Penthouse, doesn't he? And as I said, they'll run all their articles past me before they publish them. Remove the blemishes. Here's August 85, Omni. The real secret of the pyramids. Could the Egyptian pyramids have been astronomical observatories? Who'd you let in here tonight? That's one popular theory, bolstered by the belief that a passageway that descends... Did you get Frank Array on the phone? Is he still on the phone? I want to talk to him. So he's got to call back, and when you get him on the phone, you hold him there. You tell Frank Array he ain't getting in the first night if I don't talk to him tonight. You just get him on the phone, just hold it. Just leave it off the hook till I'm ready to talk to him. Better than this in the opening night in Dallas, isn't it? Could the Egyptian pyramids have been astronomical observatories? Now, don't expect anything on this program to be like it was last time you watched. We never know what we're going to do. Could the Egyptian pyramids have been astronomical observatories? Well, they're still in here. That's one popular theory bolstered by the belief that a passageway that descends from the north face of the Great Pyramid of Khufu was designed to point at the North Star. Now, Dick Walker. Old Dickie boy's got himself something to say here now. I gotta get prepared for this. Where's my cigar circumciser? Last night I got so mad at one of these evangelists. I thought I could suck the fire through this cigar without circumcising it, but it didn't work. A spiritual cigar. It helps, you know, you think better if you warm your brain up. I mean, I'm telling you, when I get ready to read these pronouncements by Dick Walker, of the U.S. Naval Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, says that the angle of the passageway has nothing to do with astronomy. Just like that, he wiped out 135 years of research. He says the angle of the passageway has nothing to do with astronomy. It was simply a smart contractor's decision designed to help the Egyptians move large stone blocks in a hurry. Today, of course, you know, they could build this pyramid, line it up to true north accidentally. make its measuring device be exactly one pyramid inch. Wonder if Dick Walker analyzed that. I mean, you know, the pyramid inch happens to be exactly 1/500,000,000th of the distance from the North Pole to the South Pole. There's a line run right through the earth, divided into 500,000,000 parts. You got exactly the measuring unit they built the pyramid with. They accidentally came up with that. They encase within the pyramid the exact distance from the earth to the sun. Good guess. You got Frankie over there? You tell old Frankie, just wait a minute. Just tell him, wait a minute. Is he busy? Well, he's just watching the program. Come here, Mike. I'll write a message. You give it to him. Get the cameras off of this. Don't you get a picture of this message. We're writing the play together, you know. For all you know, I just have come up with a burst of genius. Now, you give him that message right now. And if he carries out the assignment, he can have a seat first night in Dallas. Now, let's go back to Dick Walker. Astronomical genius. Of course, you know, when they built the pyramid, they were able to put in the dimensions and the measurements around the side, all three of the years, the sidereal, anomalistic year, and the solar year. They just guessed, you know, and it came out. They were able to cut the stones with such precision that it'd take modern optical instruments to do it and pour cement 36 square feet vertically. And yet, they bored a hole like this, or set up an angle like this so they can move those rocks faster. The simple things were what they found difficult. Today, the 370-foot shaft points to a spot 26.5230 degrees above the north horizon. That's actually a few degrees from Polaris, the North Star. Well, any dumb fool knows that. Precession of the equinoxes changes the North Star approximately every 2,000 years. I don't need Dick Walker to tell me that. But the Earth's poles have gradually changed since the time of the pharaohs. Big deal. I guess Dick Walker's impressed with things like that. Big deal. In the early 19th century, British astronomer John Herschel calculated that in 2800 B.C., when the pyramid was built, the passage would have pointed at Thuban, the North Star of the time. That started generations of speculation about the astronomical purposes of the pyramids. Recalculating the Earth's wobble with modern methods, however, Walker found that Thuban was not visible from the base of the passage in 2800 B.C. He wasn't surprised. He says the ancient Egyptians knew no trigonometry, little astronomy, and had trouble with fractions. I mean, for a man who specializes in curves, he ought to stay away from pyramids. I mean, I got news for Dick Walker. The lineup was 2441 B.C. That's about 599 years away from 2800. Or 399 years away from. Yeah, I mean, you know, Dick Walker's errors are catching. It's 399 years away from 2800. Almost a fourth of the precession of the equinox. It's amazing how, you know, people can poo-poo things with error. As I said, Gucci only ought to run things by me before he publishes them. I mean, if you're going to criticize the Thuban theory, stick to the year it was there. B.C., not 2800. And a day either way changed the angle. Let's just leave Dick Walker and go on about our business. I just thought I'd make that little contribution. Interesting books I got around here tonight. What in the world is that supposed to be? What's that got to do with science? Who in the hell eats purple toothpaste? I'm telling you, you need to listen to me. You can be misled in all these things you read. And they knew no trigonometry? Here's an interesting book, Ireland, A Journey into Lost Time. Another one of the some 5,000 books that revolve around Atlantis. Interesting theory. We pointed out that you take the northwest marker stone and the north or the southeast marker stone of Stonehenge and connect them and carry the line as a rum line right on through the Mediterranean. It hits the pyramid dead on the nose. We pointed out the same measurement units are in the Stonehenge as in the pyramid. You do a slice section of the pyramid and lay it on the ground over Stonehenge, they perfectly synchronize in the lineups that are part of Stonehenge with the pyramid. This book believes that citizens of Atlantis moved from the west to the east, building those stone monuments in Ireland before they ever got to Egypt. Interesting theory. I bring this because we've got so much we've got to cover. We've got to get back to Atlantis. But that's not for tonight. I'm on complicated things, like how to speak Southern. Laugh. Laugh. That's it, laugh. Now, my dad's worried about me. He called again today and says, son, you're just a slow learner. I've been talking Southern all your life, and you still can't talk it when you're reading the book. Laugh. You know what laugh is, don't you? It's the opposite of death. Nobody said laugh was going to be easy. I love that Hearn. You suppose that blonde hair is really Hearn? And I really like goobers. That was the good one. Goobers are what you drop in Coca-Cola and watch it fizz. Peanuts. How many of you knew goobers were peanuts? Look at all these smart people. You know what tar orange, don't you? You know, you can't change a tire with... I mean, you can't change a tar without a tar orange. We're just covering lots of things tonight. You know what sour is, don't you? It's opposite of sweet. Now, I think we ought to have this in our bookstore, don't you? You know what phrasing is, don't you? Shut that door, it's phrasing in here. I still think my favorite is wretched. 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 Like wretched Burton. Waller. Not Fats. Waller. Billy, don't you waller all over that bed. I just made it up. You know what Bob War is, don't you? What war is? Wash rag. Hang up that wash rag when you're done with it. And you know what a wast is, don't you? You know what a wast is? John knows what it is. Watch out, that's a wast, and he's mad as a hornet. And whir. I thought whir was something helicopters did. Whir. Where are you going? You know what a winder light is, don't you? What's a winder light? To paint a glass. That baseball went right through the winder light. Look, don't look at me funny. This is how to speak Southern by Southerners about Southerners and for Southerners. This is the authoritative book. How to speak Southern. I'm going to put it in my bookstore. You just can't travel in the South, can't speak Southern. Ah. Ah. The things you see with. And the personal pronoun denoting individuality. Like, I think I've got something in my ah. Amon. You know what amon is? It's an expression of intent. Amon, have a little drink. You want one. Like, amon, get on the telephone. Amon, now, get with it. You know what an arn is? Electrical instrument used to remove wrinkles from clothing. You know what arse taters are, don't you? You know what arse taters are? What's arse taters? No, not no. Arse taters, a staple of the Irish diet and the source of French fries. I like some arse taters, but I hate to peel them. Hey, why are you answering the phone? I'm talking. You don't answer the phone when I'm talking. I got to warm them up a little bit. Somebody might be calling from Columbus and they won't know what's going on. Takes a while to get acquainted with me. You know what ast is, don't you? Don't ask me so many questions, it makes me mad. Adair. You know what Adair is? Pass me Adair gravy, please. I like this book. I like to get educated. You know what ball is, don't you? You know what ball is? B-A-W-L. Ball. That gal can't even boil water without burning it. I don't want to bother with that anymore. I think I'm going to go to another sub. Let's talk about reincarnation. What am I doing with Brigham Young, American Moses? What am I doing with that? Great day in the morning. There must have been something in it that I like, something in it that I like, or I wouldn't have had it here tonight. It's going through my library shelf. I ain't no Mormon. In fact, I don't like the word cults, and I believe everybody ought to be respected. You don't have to agree with everybody to respect them. Of course, you have to both agree and respect me. You don't really have to. It's just a sign of intelligence if you do. You realize there are folks in Columbus saying, what in the world is my set doing to me tonight? I like to find something good about everybody if I can. What was it that made me get this book and bring it tonight? Oh, he didn't much like preachers. For example, at the age of 23, Brigham Young committed himself to Methodism. He said, I thought to myself, I'd try to break off my sins and lead a better life and be as moral as I possibly could. Now, what were his sins and where he was going after this life, he didn't know, but he thought he'd like to be as good as I know how while I'm here. He later said he joined the church to get rid of him, same as a girl who marries a man to get rid of him. But once in the church, you got that. You know, he later said he joined the church to prevent being pestered about his unbelief. So I joined the Methodists, he said, to get rid of them and all the sex, just the same as a girl married the man to get rid of him. You smart ones got that figure. Women know what I'm saying. Once in the church, Brigham was not content. He says, as I became acquainted with smart, intelligent, literary priests, I thought, now I can obtain some intelligence from this or from that man. And I began to ask a question, but they'd always leave me as they found me, in the dark. He said, I'd as lief go into a swamp at midnight to learn how to paint a picture as to go to the religious world, learn about God, heaven, hell, or the faith of a Christian. Now, I'm not too high on Brigham Young, but he sure had some pretty good ideas about preachers. This is an interesting book. You know, there are just a lot of people that end up in the ditch because they find the same thing that Brigham Young found out about religion. Just a lot of pontificating about nothing. He says, you know, my dear friend, as for the existing preachers I've listened to, he says, I found I could put all their doctrines when simmered down to truth into a snuff box of the smallest class and put it in my vest pocket and go on my way. You can even get truth from a man you disagree with. Now I know why the Mormon Church sprung up. That doesn't make me want to join the Mormon Church, but I think it's a shame that so much preaching leaves that same kind of emptiness. But he's got a real line in here somewhere about how little they said. He had listened to them for an hour, hours on end, and when he was done, it was all empty. And it's a choice quote, and I think I can find it. It's really, really a good one. I said, I've never quoted Brigham Young before in my life, but I think I'm going to quote this one and make him more famous than he already was. Here it is. You know, he said, well, let's save that one. I'll come back to that. Here's where I wanted to come tonight. Now, if I've got everybody confused, they're just like Columbus. It's hard for anybody to catch on where we're at right now, and that was the purpose of all this. So everybody starts out the same place. Reincarnation. You want to finish this story tonight? I left off, then suddenly light dawned. Got it? Now, again, I don't believe in reincarnation. For two nights now, I've been teaching the things I don't believe. But I think it's time that we quit putting viewpoints down just because we don't know anything about them. And I proclaim a faith that isn't jarred and made insecure by any truth, that can respect alternative viewpoints, not put them down, and find a way to encompass those alternative viewpoints, not in agreement, but a way to explain them from your own viewpoint without being tolerant in a superior way. I have watched the Christian church shy away from reincarnation, act like it's all a bunch of bosh. So I started last night on a subject I've been asked to teach on for a long, long time, introducing the subject to reincarnation and showing you how much solid evidence is there for those who believe it. In Christianity, I don't believe in reincarnation. But I don't put down the evidence, and Christianity, you better learn how to deal with it or your kids are going to find out about it anyway. I think I'll go ahead and read Brigham Young's quotation. I've been reading the biography, probably the finest one written of Brigham Young. Brigham Young, American Moses. I'm not a Mormon. I will be teaching on elements of Mormon theory when we teach on the lost tribes and what they believe and what the basis of it is. I respect the Mormon people. I'm a churchman that thinks it's time we quit using the word cults so loosely. It's an emotive word used to denigrate people you don't like and that you haven't taken the time to understand. Cults is a word you should reserve for a Jimmy Jones type group. Cults is thrown loosely around. Well, I know in Bible school they got all these books, The Chaos of Cults, and you got people who make a living in the church being negative. And they build straw men, ridicule the straw man they build up, and they don't really give a fair shake to the opposition. I'm tired of the television evangelist that says God doesn't hear the prayers of Jews and Catholics. Who's he to tell God who to listen to? God's been listening to Jews for a long time. And he's been listening to Catholics. And I'd sooner be a Jew and Catholic and take my chances going to heaven than that judgmental evangelist. I'm tired of some of the nutty stuff that's being peddled for Christianity. You don't have to park your brains at the door of a church to be a Christian. You don't have to be a freak. You don't have to be an oddball. You don't have to stop breathing to be a Christian. You don't have to be cramming your faith down everybody's throat. You ought to let God save people. I'm a preacher, and I don't try to convert anybody. If anybody wants to go to hell, leave them alone. If they don't believe in hell, leave them alone too. I think it's time that somebody be on television talking about these ultimate issues with some fairness and some objectivity. I did my doctorate at Stanford. Thank God for a professor who said to me, I won't coerce your beliefs. I'm just going to make sure you know what you believe and are able to articulate it when you get out of here. People attend my church that are not of my faith. And I respect them. Now I'm going to start continuing the story on reincarnation. I make it very clear going out the gate. I don't believe in reincarnation. I think absent with the body is present with Christ. Don't believe in soul sleeping. But don't belittle it. Don't write off Edgar Cayce. I'll be teaching on him. Don't write off Nostradamus. Don't write off reincarnation as an idiot belief. There's solid evidence that allows the interpretation of reincarnation. I interpret the evidence differently. But don't belittle the evidence. And I'm going to show you in a minute. But I don't often quote Brigham Young. But I like this one. Practical and thoughtful youth he was, trying to find the faith, going to church. He tried them all. Episcopalians, Presbyterians, New Life, Baptists, Free Will Baptists, Wesleyan, Reformed Methodists. But the practical and thoughtful youth was left unmoved, even by the noted Methodist revivalist Lorenzo Dow. Any of you remember Lorenzo Dow? Years later, from a Utah pulpit, Brigham gave a burlesque of one of Dow's sermons. He stood up some of the time. He sat down some of the time. He was in this position and in that position and talked 2 or 3 hours, and when he got through, I asked myself, what have I learned from Lorenzo Dow? Now, I really believe God led me to this after I listened to television evangelists all day Sunday. What have you learned from Lorenzo Dow? My answer was, nothing. Nothing but morals. He could tell the people they could not work on the Sabbath day, they could not lie, they should not lie, they could not swear, they should not swear, they could not steal, they could not commit adultery, and etc. But when it came to teaching the things of God, he was as dark as midnight. You ever felt that way about preachers? Well, he said some more, but that's good enough for tonight. That's why we get into these things on this subject. I think the preacher ought to have a function other than dumping on you for your sins all the time. Don't you hate for a guy to tell you how terrible your sins are when you know he don't even know how to sin good? Me caught dead smoking that cigar. Well, I'm alive. I smoke it. I wouldn't smoke it dead either. So, tonight, I'm going to continue on the subject of reincarnation. Not because I believe it, but because it's time that we face up to the fact as Christians that there's some solid evidence. Therefore, how do we meet this evidence? Can I reread up to the point of Hafiz if I promise to keep going? While Dr. Stevenson was in Brazil in 1962 investigating a case, he met an immigrant from Lebanon who said that in his native village, Cornail, there were many cases of rebirth. The man provided Stevenson with a card of introduction to his brother there. Now I'm reading from Reincarnation, A New Horizon in Science, Religion, and Society by Sylvia Cranston and Kerry Williams. The man provided Stevenson with a card of introduction to his brother there, but it wasn't until 2 years later that the doctor could visit the place. So one day in early March in 1964, without advance warning, he suddenly appeared only to learn that the brother had escaped the cold winter of his mountainous area and was spending the winter in Beirut. Am I boring you? When the villagers learned of Stevenson's mission, they told him of a 5-year-old boy, Imad Elawar, who had been incessantly talking about his former life since the age of 1. This was not a matter of astonishment to the natives. They were familiar with such revelations. In fact, Stevenson relates that among these people who are not Muslims but members of the Druze religion, The incidence of reincarnation cases is among the highest in the world. The 200,000 existing Druzes live mainly in Lebanon, Syria, northern Israel, and Jordan. One of the reasons we can't understand the Middle East, we don't know anything about them. You can't understand what's going on in Iran and among the Shiites if you don't understand their concept of the Messiah and the hidden Imam. We're hearing about the Druzes in the news every day, and we just simply can't cope with their willingness to get in a truck and drive it into a building full of explosives. Now, I know the Shiites have been doing most of that, but the Druzes are there too. Well, if you believe in reincarnation, getting blown up ain't all that big a deal to you. The 200,000 existing Druzes live mainly in Lebanon, Syria, northern Israel, and Jordan. Quite a few have now immigrated to the United States and Brazil. Stevenson located the father of Imad, found he was the cousin of his friend in Brazil. The case turned out to be one of his strongest and is especially valuable because he was able to investigate it before the two families involved, past and present, knew of each other's existence. Now, Dr. Stevenson is a thorough researcher in reincarnation evidence. Dropping in out of the blue, he was able to freshly examine the behavior of the boy at home, and also when he first met his supposed former relatives, the boy's former relatives. Consequently, before any attempt was made to locate these people, Stevenson recorded over 50 items the child said he remembered. Now for the story itself. Imad was born December 21, 1958, and when he began to speak, the first words he said were the names Jamili and Mahmud. As he became more fluent, if you're watching for the first time, I'm trying to figure out what's funny about this. I mean, I just started on this the other night and I lost one cameraman and half my crowd. But I'm going to keep going. Do you know these people? As he became more fluent, the boy that is, he soon revealed many facts about his prior life. The names of people he formerly knew, the property he owned, some of the events of his life. Look at Craig. I mean, I've never seen anything I've ever taught make him happy as reincarnation. He must be sitting there having visions about what he's going to be in the next life. I don't know what's so funny. Let me read it again, see if I can pick up on it. Imad was born December 21st, 1958, and when he began to speak, the first words he said were the names Jamili and Mahmud. As he became more fluent, he soon revealed many facts about his prior life, the names of people he formerly knew, the property he owned, and some of the events of his life. He recalled being a member of the Buhamzi family. It's Jamili and Mahmud and Buhamzi that's getting them going over there. He recalled being a member of the Buhamzi family that lived in Kribi, a village separated from Kanal by 25 miles winding mountainous road. Among his present family, only his father had ever visited Kribi, and this was on the occasion of a prominent Druze's funeral. Imad would talk to himself about the people whose names he mentioned and ask aloud how these people were getting along. He was 5 years old. He also spoke of these things in his sleep. Now, you ought to have this five-year-old kid throwing these names around. There were 14 names of individuals he mentioned, but the one he spoke about most was Jamili, whose beauty he raved about, comparing it with that of his more unattractive mother. Jamili, he said, wore red clothes that he had bought for her. She wore high heels, unusual even today among women in her village. Imad's mother reported that when he was about 3 years old, his longing for Jamili reached its height And one day, lying on a bed with his mother, he suddenly, I ain't going to finish that sentence. Then buy the book. I'm going to finish that. Page 84, Reincarnation, A New Horizon in Science, Religion, and Society. I know why he's laughing. The cameraman's reading over my shoulder. Lying in bed with his mother, he suddenly, blank, blank, to blank, blank, as blank, blank, Jamila, blank, under blank, blank. I'm going to read that. Among his other memories was his fondness for hunting. He's a 5-year-old boy. He had a rifle in that previous life and also a double-barreled shotgun, he said. To describe the latter, he held two fingers together. Among other property, he owned a house which he described, a small yellow car, a bus, and a truck that hauled rocks. What would you do if your 5-year-old boy came in here telling you that? Among events in his former life, he remembered beating a dog. But the one thing that bothered him most was a serious accident in which a truck ran over a man, broke his legs, and crushed his trunk. It's that crushed trunk that turned you on the other night. The man said Imid was taken to the doctor's place and had an operation. To Imid's mother and grandmother, this revelation seemed particularly significant because when the child first learned to walk, he constantly exclaimed how wonderful it was to be able to walk again. That would shake you up, wouldn't it? His father discounted all these stories and called the child a liar. Thereafter, the son spoke of such matters only among the female members of his family. They're gullible. However, everyone took notice one day when 2-year-old Imid, stopping a complete stranger on the street, joyously threw his arms around him. The startled man exclaimed, "Do you know me?" The boy says, "Yes, you were my neighbor." The man was Salem L. Ashkar, a native of Creeby. He once lived close to Imid's former house, a fact that was only discovered later, for at this point no one knew which Buhamzi family the boy really belonged to. Well, you know, to those that are watching for the first time, we have all kinds that just wander in here, you know. I just got the clue. 5 lifetimes of rejection. Hope has just come to Craig Lamb. Finally. I think he's embarrassed because he's afraid that Emmett here is going to turn out to be Craig's predecessor. Do you know me? Yes, you were my neighbor. The man was Salem L. Ashkar, a native of Creeby. He once lived close to Emmett's former house, a fact that was only discovered later, for at this point no one knew which Buhamzi family the boy really belonged to. However, this did not prevent his present family from coming to rather definite conclusions, but quite incorrect conclusions, as we shall see. Thus, in the beginning, Stevenson was given some very misleading clues. Here's the story the parents had pieced together. Am I boring you? As the first words the child had spoken as a baby were Mahmoud and Jamili, they must have been the names of himself and his wife. Mahmoud must have been killed by a truck. This seemed to be confirmed not only by Imid's recall of the accident, but because as a child he had a notable phobia for large trucks and buses. Even as a toddler, he had run and hide from them.
This is the end of side one. Side 2. Thank you.